You're listening to the 365 Sportscast Network, the streaming future of sports talk radio. Listen to us round the clock on the net over 365sportscast.com. On your phone with the 365 Sportscast app, and on your favorite smart speaker by enabling the 365 Sportscast skill and saying, "Play 365 Sports." The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of 365 Sportscast LLC, its owners and partners, or this network.
The big banks keep raising mortgage interest rates, but you don't have to pay big bank rates because YourRate.ca still has access to mortgage rates under 2%. Secure a 5-year fixed term for 1.74% or a 3-year fixed for 1.59%. YourRate.ca could save you thousands. Act now before these record low rates disappear. Rates OAC, terms and conditions apply. YourRate.ca, powered by Invis Canada's mortgage experts.
Blue Jays, baseball, and more Blue Jays. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack on 365 Sportscast.
This ball is crushed.
The radio show for everything Toronto Blue Jays.
And another one. My goodness.
Hey, this is Rob Wong, the host of Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You're listening to the Walk-Off Podcast with Scott and Adam.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Walk-Off. We are a Toronto Blue Jays-focused show here on 365 Sportscast, the radio network. I'm your host, Scott Belford, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Adam Mack.
Hello, hello.
How goes her, bud?
Living the dream, my friend. Living the dream.
That's right. Of course, the Blue Jays just took 2 of 3 against the Rays. We've got about 6 games to go here before the All-Star break. The Jays are playing the Orioles, and then they're playing the Rays one more time here. We have got a fantastic guest for you here today that we're going to throw to in seconds, literally. Joined right now, are very close, joined right away by Rob Wong of 590 The Fan Sportsnet Radio in Toronto. He's a Blue Jays insider, and we'll get into all things Blue Jays. Of course, right after the show here, we're going to do our live stream, which you can get to on the YouTube page, The Walk Off, and join us for that. We do live streams every single Tuesday. Of course, that is brought to you by YourRate.ca. Darren Brown, the mortgage broker, sure to help you out, get into that mortgage that you're after, all online, all paperless, all COVID-friendly at YourRate.ca. All right, well, we won't waste any more time here. We'll get to it. Everybody, enjoy the interview with Rob Wong. So pleased to be joined by today's guest, the host of Blue Jays Baseball and Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Rob Wong. Welcome to The Walk-Off. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, guys, great to finally be on. I know we've been in contact before, and it's just nice to finally get a chance to talk to you guys.
Yeah, we're excited to talk some baseball with you, my man. Jays Talk, I always enjoy it, by the way. I love your takes. I love how you interact with everyone there, so well done on that, man. Very enjoyable.
Thank you.
Yeah, you
thank
bet.
Thank you.
How are you all holding up in Ontario? I know here in Alberta, things are opening up here. Does it feel like the light at the end of the COVID tunnel is getting any brighter there?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, we're into stage 2 now, so you can't really tell by looking at me, but you can get haircuts these days.
Oh.
And I'm in need of one pretty badly. I'll probably get one over the next few days here. But, you know, patio season is beginning, so I think people are nice to finally be able to get out and, you know, just do some things because it's been such a long, long time. And, yeah, there's definitely light at the end of the tunnel, but maybe that light will finally be when the Blue Jays come back and play in Toronto. I think once that happens, that will, you know, finally make things feel a little bit normal compared to what it's been like for the last, I guess, a year and a bit now.
Agreed, man. Even just to watch on television, it would be nice to see the guys back at Rogers Center. I know the border restrictions are starting to be lifted here, and vaccination rates are up, and the Jays have applied to return home, and there's all sorts of rumors about that. And I also know you're not privy to any federal government insider news or anything like that, but what is your sense about the Blue Jays coming home? Do you think we're going to be seeing games at Rogers Center by August?
I think it's, you know, a good sign that the border restrictions are lifting, and these reports out there that at least from the municipal and provincial levels, the Blue Jays have received approval, and it's just up to the feds at this point. That's a tough, you know, hurdle to jump, of course, at this point. I think we all understand that there are many factors at work, and the Blue Jays have been pretty adamant that it's not going to be a situation where they say, hey, you can come home now and they're home tomorrow. It's going to take a few weeks in order for them to get it all figured out and ultimately come home. So, you know, I think people have looked at that July 30th, you know, range as potential, but if not, maybe a little bit further into August. I'm still optimistic. I've been optimistic even dating back to, you know, April and May, just because I thought, hey, we're going to get all vaccinated here. And, you know, at some point they're going to let, you know, people come and watch Blue Jays baseball or watch the Blue Jays play at Rogers Center this year. So I'm still holding out hope. I think the most recent news is definitely a positive sign. Toronto FC, you know, they kind of got that ball rolling yesterday for with sure. The news from their team president saying that we're coming home regardless, and we expect to play at some point in Ontario. So it does seem, you know, that it's going in the right direction, but it's still, I guess, cautiously optimistic at this point, but I'm definitely more on the positive side that I do think we'll see the Blue Jays play some baseball at Rogers Center this summer.
Oh, it would sure be nice. I know it's kind of wild to think of how many of these Blue Jays have never played a game in front of Toronto fans, man. Yeah. Like, Ryu is the one that blows me away. Like, he's been with the team for almost 2 years now. Simeon and Springer and Espinal and Ray. I mean, the list goes on. And not just played in front of Toronto fans, but played in front of a Rogers Center crowd as a winning playoff contending team. How big of a, and I know this is an intangible, but how big of a boost do you think that that could be for this team going into September baseball?
Well, I think it would be huge. You know, we've talked a lot about the fact that, you know, down in Dunedin, there were many nights they were the visiting team because you had, you know, fans of the Rays or fans of the Phillies coming from Clearwater, you know, Yankees fans that watched their games down in Florida invading TD Ballpark. And, you know, the Blue Jays are getting cheered against or booed, you know, when they're coming up to the plate or all these things. It's like, well, this is their home ballpark. It's bizarre. So, like you said, it's an intangible thing, but, you know, it can only help. The fact that the Blue Jays play in front of their home fans going down the stretch here, trying to hunt down a playoff spot. And, you know, I mentioned it on the most recent Jays talk about exactly what you said, that the fact that we haven't seen some of these guys in their Blue Jay tenures play a ton of games at Rogers Center. I mean, you mentioned Ryu hasn't played in front of, you know, Korean fans at Rogers Center. Vladdy's having an MVP caliber season. There's a chance that we may not see a single game of that in Toronto this year, which would be absolutely incredible. George Springer's first year, Marcus Semien, potentially a one and done, and we never see a game in Toronto from him. Like, there's just so many of these things on the table that, you know, even if it's just the final, you know, month of the season, and, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, at least seeing the final stretch, I think would be a nice boost. And I think it would definitely help. I mean, I think if you ask the players, would you rather play in Toronto in front of home fans, and would you rather, you know, be in Buffalo and be in all of that? I think they would prefer to come home and play in a major league ballpark and all of that comes with it.
Man, you make such a good point about Vladdy's season. And I just, looking back on 2015 when Donaldson came in and he had his MVP campaign, and just how excited the fans were and the MVP chants as early as July, right? And just like this big push for him to be the MVP. And I mean, obviously what Shohei Ohtani is doing is absolutely incredible, but the Angels fans are allowed and able to push that narrative, right? Whereas like, the Blue Jays fans, we don't even get to chant MVP. We don't get to, like, you know, lift our guy up. It's I'm excited for him to come home.
Yeah, I think so as well. I mean, we've heard some MVP chants from the fans in Buffalo. And, you know, I don't want to say any, you know, negative things about the fans in Buffalo, because they've been great. Few months here where the Blue Jays have, you know, been in Buffalo, the fans have been phenomenal with the job that they've, you know, done, and how much they've welcomed the Blue Jays to that city, of course. But the Blue Jays are from Toronto, and until, you know, that border restriction gets lifted, and maybe Toronto people from Ontario can actually travel down to Buffalo and watch some of those games, I think that would add a different dynamic. And maybe that's what has to happen for, you know, Blue Jays fans in Canada to be able to see their Blue Jays in person, that they'll have to go to Buffalo, which would be unfortunate. But it's just not the same from, you know, being in Toronto at Rogers Center with the Canadian fans going crazy for a Vladdy Jr. MVP caliber season.
at least when it's in Toronto and the Yankees come to town, only a third of the fans are cheering for the Yankees.
Yeah. I when I was a kid growing up and going to games and going to see the Yankees and Red Sox, there was definitely a lot of that being surrounded by visiting fans. And times have changed, I think, a little bit more, where in the last few years, it's, you know, mostly Blue Jays fans. You still see Yankees and Red Sox fans, of course, make the trip up, but not as bad as I think it was, you know, in the early to mid 2000s when the Yankees and Red Sox were at their heights and felt like, you know, 60-70% of the ballpark was Yankees and Red Sox fans coming up because they couldn't get a ticket back home, but they could get a ticket in Toronto because it was a lot easier.
Exactly. So this team just took 2 of 3 from the Rays. And I know that ninth inning of yesterday's game kind of left a sour taste a bit in some people's mouths, but nonetheless, they did win the series. That's a success, right? Like, you're happy with that, 2 of 3?
Oh, absolutely. I think coming into the series, you know, a sweep would have been in the 90th percentile of outcomes because it's just so difficult to sweep, you know, teams, especially good teams like the Tampa Bay Rays. And I think what the Blue Jays have shown, you know, in this series specifically, and even dating back to when they got swept by the Rays a few weeks ago, I mean, they can play with any of these teams. Like, I know the record right now, you look at the Red Sox and they're, what, 8 games up on the Blue Jays for first, and now the Rays are 4 games ahead. But when you actually watch the games and see these two teams compete, they're all pretty tight and close games. The Blue Jays haven't been blown out in very many games at all this season. So, you know, I think you look at the standings and it doesn't really paint a picture of how competitive the Blue Jays are with some of these teams. But, you know, winning series, period, taking 2 of 3 from anybody, you consistently do that time and time again, you're going to be in a good spot. So a sweep would have been great, but still taking 2 out of 3 from Tampa, you're never going to be upset about that.
Agreed, man. And to that point, like, this stat stood out to me. I saw the other day where 23 of the 38 losses that the Blue Jays have had have been by 2 runs or less. Like, that is, that's unreal.
Yeah, that's kind of just speaks to what we just talked about, the fact that they're in all of these games. Like, I can probably count on one hand the amount of games that they really haven't been in. And maybe the Yusei Kikuchi start on the weekend, that was probably the most recent one where, you know, they were in it for the first couple of innings, but then after that really felt like they, you know, never had a chance to win that ball game. So I think for me, that's what gives me optimism that, you know, you add some more pieces to this team, and I don't want to say they're going to be a juggernaut by any means, but they're going to be one of the teams in the mix for a playoff spot down the stretch if they can just make a few more additions, because the offense, we've seen it, it's great. The starting rotation obviously has been a lot better as well of late. It's the bullpen that sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And if you can make a move there, you know, add another bat, maybe add some pitching, you know, but just, you just can dream on what this team potentially could be over the last half of the season.
Rob, what are your thoughts on Rafael Dolis?
I think, you know, I made the point yesterday that, you know, 2020 for him was great. He was one of the more reliable pitchers on this team, but it's not 2020 anymore. It's 2021, and we know how volatile relievers can be season to season. And I know Charlie Montoyo said yesterday that, you know, he's a guy that's, you know, did it for us last year, and we've seen him in moments, and we want to get him back to that point. And I think that's all well and good that they want to get him back to that point, but I don't think we've seen it enough this year to continue to trust him. At some point, you have to make the decision that it's just not working out and stop trying to force the, you know, square peg into the round hole. Like, I know there's moments where he comes in and he does look very good. And that's sort of the state of this Blue Jays bullpen right now that unfortunately, because they don't have, you know, enough reinforcements that, you know, Rafael Dolis is going to be put in these situations. So I think if he's still, you know, being put in these situations, you know, by the end of the month, and there hasn't been any additions, that that's a bad sign. And maybe he does turn things around. You know, I can't say that, you know, I'm disappointed in Rafael Dolis getting these chances when I, you know, said very recently that I still believe in Tyler Chatwin, who I think a lot of people have, you know, thrown.
Oh, we've all eaten our words on that one, eh, bud?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, if I'm going to say that I still believe in Tyler Chatwin, then I can't, you know, paint the same picture with Rafael Dolis. But, you know, I just think the situation here is, we got to stop looking at the past performance. And, you know, unfortunately, it's a what have you done for me lately business when it comes to relief pitchers. And right now he's just not getting the job done. So that's just my opinion. You know, Charlie obviously said yesterday that they're going to keep putting him in these spots, and we'll see how he does. But in a perfect world, you know, Rafael Dolis is a guy that's coming in, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh. But, you know, for high leverage, I think that's, you know, not exactly the spot right now anyways that he should be put in, according to me, if I was manager.
My biggest fear with Rafael Dolis is that next year he's going to be in a Tampa Bay Rays uniform and be the best high leverage reliever in the division. And we're just all going to be like, how? Like,
yeah, that's everybody's biggest fear. You go to Tampa Bay and you just turn your career around in whatever position they put you in. So
yeah,
that would be bad, but that would be very Tampa Bay Rays.
I know you just touched on it here. So the bullpen is, well, it's not the tire fire that it was 3 weeks ago. It still definitely needs some work. Where are you at on this, Penn?
I think there's maybe a handful of pitchers that you really, really trust at this point. And Jordan Romano right at the top of the list. Adam Simber, who they just picked up, I think he's gotten 10 outs and hasn't given up a run. So he's been
everything
as advertised.
Been touted to be a grand round ball, like just balls in play. It's been great. Yeah.
Soft contact guy. Like he's been a great addition. And, you know, if I'm looking beyond that, I think Tim Mesa has probably worked his way into that conversation where, you know, he can be trusted a little bit as well. So, you know, beyond that, I'm not sure what you're going to get. I know, you know, Jacob Barnes is intriguing, guy that throws in the mid 90s and, you know, has a decent breaking ball. The Blue Jays obviously picked him up in sort of a, you know, under the radar deal when they were, you know, looking to get some relief help. So it's still not great. You know, I think in order to be competitive, you need more than just three guys that you can trust in a given series. So I'm still looking at reinforcements. I'd be shocked if the Blue Jays don't add at least, you know, one more big relief piece before the trade deadline.
Maybe
we know
two,
Ryan Barucki.
Yeah,
maybe two. I mean, if you could add two, that would be great. We know Ryan Barucki's working his way back. You know, Julian Merriweather, knock on wood, you're hoping he's going to be able to come back and do what he did at the beginning of the season, but that's obviously a big if. So I think, you know, when I just look at this pen, I say it's okay for now. It's not, like you said, the tire fire that it was a few weeks ago, but it still needs quite a bit of improvement if this team has aspirations of wanting to be big time players in the second half.
So you asked this on Twitter last night, and I'm going to flip the script on you here and
sure.
use your question against you. Taylor Cicedo, is he a guy now? Like, he has looked decent. Has he earned some trust, like some more innings, do you think?
Yeah, I'm curious where the Blue Jays land on him, because when you look at the numbers and you know, the ERA predictors and all that stuff, it's really good. Like the ERA is under two. He's striking out, I think, 31% of the batters he's facing right now, 60% ground balls. I still think, you know, right-handed hitters give him a bit of trouble. I think when you look at the numbers, lefties haven't had a chance really at all against him since he's come up to the big leagues. It's always, you know, tough trusting a lefty to come in and get, you know, both sides of the plate out. Like Ryan Barucki, we see can do it because he's got the nasty slider and the big time fastball. And, you know, Tim Mesa, they've started to trust more and more. The reason I bring him up is, you know, because of Rafael Dolis and some of these other guys in the pen that just, you know, haven't been very trustworthy. I've, you know, wanted to see it for a while where you just, if a guy's going well, give him some more opportunities. And for people listening to this, they may have heard me, you know, kind of go off on the bullpen recently in Charlie Montoyo when Taylor Cicedo came into that game. I think it was last week. I think it was against the Orioles, right?
It was against the Orioles
where Tyler Chatwood blew up in that game, and Cicedo came in and gave up the big hit to Austin Hayes. And the reason I said I wouldn't have gone to Cicedo in that spot because I thought Jordan Romano should have come into the game. So
Agreed.
It wasn't a knock against Cicedo. It was more just you had Jordan Romano there to put out the fire. You should have gone there. So for me, Cicedo, I would like to see him get more opportunities. I'm still a little bit weary that I think, not that it's smoke and mirrors, but I think, you know, maybe against right-handed pitching, it might be a little bit more difficult for him. But it's, again, because of the state of this pen, I just want to see different guys get some opportunities here and see what they have. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if it does, maybe you have something there.
And I 100% agree with that. And I think that everything that they have asked Cicedo to do to this point, he has done. Even the spot you just brought up against the Orioles, like with a runner on first and third trying to get out of a jam that Tyler Chatwood pitched his way into, he still got the ground ball that could have been, I mean, it didn't go to Bichette, it missed him by about 5 feet, but he did get the play that they wanted him to get, right? Even though, and I mean, after that, he then allowed a couple runs, but
yeah, but he's intriguing. So that's what I'll say about that.
So let's put a positive spin on this, get out of the bullpen talk here. Mid-May, Ross Stripling hit a wall, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was getting hit hard every time he was on the bump. And then he made an adjustment to his delivery because he figured that he was tipping his pitches. And it's funny, Rob, when he brought that up, I so quickly dismissed it. You know, oh, a starter is saying that it's not their stuff that's the problem, right? But man, Ross Stripling has been unreal. This is 8 pretty decent starts in a row. Where are you at on Ross Stripling? Like, have you bought in? Is this for real? Like, can we kind of expect this Ross Stripling for the rest of the season?
That is a great question. If we can buy it for the rest of the season, at the very least, we're buying it right now.
Yeah.
I was on the train pretty quickly, to be honest with you, after, you know, he made the adjustment. I may have been on the train after that first outing against Tampa Bay, where mm-hmm. he came out of the pen and was just lights out. And I know Josh Goldberg, who co-hosts Jay's Talk with me, Show Ellie as well. We've been using the hashtag New Ross. Because that's just what he's looked like, a completely different guy since making those changes. And, you know, right now in the pecking order, with Hyunjin Ryu's struggles of late, I mean, is he the second
best,
third best?
Is Ross Stripling our number one guy? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think that's sort of crazy to even say at this point. But the results suggest that that's the case. Even his last outing against Tampa Bay on Saturday wasn't great. But, you know, for him to, you know, get out of, 5-6 innings there with giving up just that one run, I mean, he's
serviceable,
a guy that
incredibly serviceable.
Yeah. And I think what people forget as well is, you know, even when he was getting knocked around earlier this year and last year was a disaster season for him in LA, and then when he came to Toronto, you look at his Baseball Reference page, you look at the Fangraphs page, this guy has been a pretty good major league pitcher throughout mm-hmm. his entire career, albeit in different roles as a bullpen guy, as a starter, swingman, but he's, you know, been very, very good at times. So when he made the All-Star team, I think in 2018 or something crazy right? So
he's
a guy that's, you know, been a very productive major league pitcher. So the mechanical changes that he's made have obviously unlocked a lot of his, talent, because, you know, we've seen him. He's thrown 95 at times. He's got the big breaking ball. You know, he's throwing changeups that are falling off the plate here and getting guys to swing and miss. So, you know, there's a lot to like about Ross Stripling, and he's under team control for a couple more years here as well. So,
yeah.
You know, he's a rotation mainstay, I think, at this point. Could it all come, you know, crashing back down to earth? Of course. I mean, pitchers are going to go through ups and downs all the time. But at this stage, I mean, the job that he's done to turn things around, you know, kudos to P. Walker as well. He's one of the more reliable guys.
That went up, you know, like, it's pretty wild to think. Well, it also goes to show you how good, how bad a pitcher can be if the hitter knows what's coming.
Yeah.
but like, just for Pete to kind of pick up that he was tipping his pitches. I mean, impressive. Seems to have worked.
It definitely has. And we'll see if it keeps going. I have faith that it does, because, like I said, the track record's there that he's a guy that knows how to get outs in the major leagues. He's got, you know, decent stuff. Is he, you know, going to be starting game 3 of a divisional series if the Blue Jays get to that point? I still don't think so.
Yeah.
I think I'm still, you know, Hyunjin Ryu, I have faith that he's going to turn around. Robbie Ray and, you know, maybe Alek Manoah, just because of the upside.
Mm-hmm.
You like him in that. But, you know, if Ross Stripling starting game 3 in a divisional series, you know, trying to win it or trying to keep the season alive, I mean, I don't hate it. Well, let's just put it that way.
Agreed, man. And while we're talking bright spots on this team, Teoscar Hernandez. And I mean, Hernandez is always been a joy to watch play, right? I mean, he just exudes so much positivity and just seems like he genuinely connects with his teammates. All-star, Silver Slugger last year. Would you like to see the Jays front office sign Teo to a contract with some term at this point? Like, do you think it's safe to say he's a prominent member of this team's core moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. Even dating back to last year and, you know, prior to that, where the breakout really, really happened, I think this is the new guy. And even this year, you know, the strikeout rate has just dipped a little bit, and he's obviously, you know, made some changes, hitting the ball to right field a lot more. We see him taking those outside pitches to right field, and, you know, that's sort of been a new dynamic to his game. There's not as much, you know, swinging for the fences every time he's coming up to the plate. He's more of a hitter now than he is just, a power guy. He's still got that pop, obviously. I think, you know, when you're looking at the core of this team, it's George Springer, it's Bo Bichette, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And I think probably Teoscar Hernandez is a part of that. I mean, when I look at that, you know, core four, that's probably how I'm moving forth. He's right in the prime of his career at this point. And, you know, I don't know necessarily what the contract would be for him, because he's still, you know, got a few more years left before, you know, that decision ultimately needs to be made. But now might be the time to get it done, because you may have a scenario here when a couple of years, maybe he continues to do this, and you know that that number that you could have gotten him for now might be a little bit higher than you would have expected. So maybe there's a case where they just play it out here because he's not going anywhere for any time soon, and they have him under team control. But he's definitely someone on the radar for sure that I would look at this offseason and maybe have a conversation. Hey, can we figure something out here to get some cost certainty here? You can stay here. You obviously, you know, enjoy it. The guys love you, and you've been a productive player. So I definitely would not disapprove of a potential contract extension for, say, Oscar Hernandez, because I think that would be a good piece of business for both sides.
What do you think it would take to do that? Are we looking kind of Batista-like contract where it's like, you know, 16 mil a year, 5 years, something like that? Like, do you think they can get it done for that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, maybe this all-star selection and the Silver Slugger last year, maybe that number has gone up, especially the fact that he's, you know, continuing to have this type of success. But I think that's probably a reasonable contract. As good as a hitter as he is, we still, you know, see that defensively he's got some struggles there. But I just think he's just in such a good situation, and the organization knows him so well that, you know, they can definitely get something done. So, you know, 15, 16 mil a year, I think that's totally fair for a guy like Teoscar Hernandez.
So let's switch gears here a little bit. Mid-May, everyone was talking about how no hitters don't mean anything anymore. And yeah, Adam is guilty of that, because there had been seven up to that point.
Yeah.
But there has not been one since. Not we're not going to count the Cubs bullpen no-hitter there. I just mean a starter who has gotten a no-hitter. In your opinion, is this coincidence, or is the sticky stuff crackdown partly the reason for this? And how much is this crackdown affecting pitchers, do you think?
That's so interesting, because, you know, there hasn't been a no-hitter, like you said, but very recently there almost was, because Herman Marquez almost threw one at Coors Field, of all places. So, of all places, Coors Field was the place that he almost did it. But I think, you know, it's very easy to draw that conclusion, and I would agree with it, that because of the, you know, crackdown on sticky substances, I think we've seen the strikeout rate dip a little bit. There's more balls in play at this point. So, you know, we've seen, you know, guys like Gerrit Cole and Aroldis Chapman, some of the best pitchers in the game, all of a sudden they're getting knocked around. And maybe it's not all related just to the sticky stuff. Maybe they're just going through a tough stretch. Yeah. It's just kind of funny that it's all not working out right now for a few of these guys that have been so
even
good for so many years. I think that makes it even better for baseball fans that it's happening to two guys wearing pinstripes at this point. But I think, you know, it's good for baseball that they're cracking down on this stuff. To be honest, not that I feel bad for pitchers, because they've obviously been taking advantage of this for a long time, but, you know, Tyler Glasnow saying that he thinks he got hurt because of this and he had to make an adjustment. I think it would have been best had Major League Baseball done it either prior to the season or in the off season, instead of doing it the way they did, where it was just like, okay, we're cracking down on it now. You got to figure it out. Boo hoo. We don't care. You just got to deal with it. And I think, you know, that probably wasn't the best way to go about it. But I think moving forward, as many people have brought up, you probably have to just, you know, find a substance that everybody can agree upon, that works for everyone.
Pre-stick the balls,
or make balls that are, you know, stickier. I think in Japan, the balls that they produce are, you know, have a little bit of attack on them coming out of the box. So it's not like teams are manipulating it themselves. It's like everybody's playing with the same ball. And I think that's probably where we're going to end up, that every pitcher gets to use the same stuff. And it'll be just, you know, stuff that allows you to grip the ball and doesn't, you know, change your spin rate one way or another. I think that's probably where we're headed.
I agree 100% with that take, man. And it's so funny to me, because when MLB, if you give a problem to Major League Baseball, their first move seems to be to grab a gun and shoot their foot. Like, I don't get why. If you're just going to ignore a problem like sticky stuff, which they have been doing for, let's face it, man, 4 or 5 years, like the real sticky stuff, right? The stuff that they're trying to eliminate. The mid-season crackdown, it's just like, I didn't understand it, other than they just gave in to public, you know, outcry or whatever it was. Either way, we can move on. But I just didn't get that move. I'm glad they did. I'm not for sticky stuff. I just, you know, Tyler Glasnow is one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's like, you know, he's the type of guy that you don't want to see go down over something like he's gripping the ball tighter because all of a sudden it's so slick, right? But speaking of the sticky stuff, how difficult do you think it's going to be for teams to properly judge how to bolster, let's say in the Blue Jays scenario, their bullpen, or to get that extra starter and feel confident that they're getting the numbers that the guy had produced at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I know some people have pointed out on Twitter recently, Richard Rodriguez of the Pittsburgh Pirates, who, you know, Blue Jays fans have wondered about, you know, could he be an acquisition? His spin rate numbers have dipped quite significantly since the crackdown, and he's had a bit of trouble recently. So I think teams are making the adjustments here, teams that are looking to, you know, other clubs and trying to inquire about those pitchers. They've got all that data. They're looking it up to see what the numbers are as well. So I think they'll make the adjustments accordingly. You know, I look at a guy like Hyunjin Ryu, for instance, just within the Blue Jays, his numbers, his spin rate numbers haven't really dipped significantly at all. I think, you know, even his last start, they were kind of up from where they've been at the beginning of the season. So for his seasonal averages. So I think that's probably where the Blue Jays are going to end up, that they're just going to look, you know, how are these numbers comparing to where they were at the beginning of the season? And if they're seeing significant drops on some of these guys, then that's got to be a red flag, because that's not what you're expecting. So, you know, I haven't honestly been looking at Baseball Savant too much at some of these relievers that could be on the market, whether it's a Craig Kimbrell or Kendall Graveman or Ian Kennedy, to see, you know, where those spin rate numbers are at. But you can imagine that the Blue Jays are definitely doing their due diligence.
Deep diving
on
it,
to make sure that they're not, you know, buying a guy that who's all of a sudden going to come in and, you know, his spin rate numbers are way down from where we saw at the beginning of the season, and there's going to be a ton of buyer's remorse. So that definitely adds a new dynamic, though. For pitchers at the trade deadline when it comes to their spin rates being down and maybe their results not exactly matching what we saw at the beginning of the year.
What did you think of the Adam Simber, Corey Dickerson acquisition? I kind of like the approach of taking on some money to kind of lessen the blow of prospects that would be given.
Yeah, I think we've seen this front office do it numerous times. You brought up Teoscar Hernandez before, and that was a perfect example of that, where they took on the Nori Aoki's contract to get a piece in Teoscar. So this is a club that's definitely flashed the financial might in recent years and deals, and I think that was another perfect example that, you know, they get a guy in Adam Simber that obviously helps their bullpen, but they take on some money that the Marlins were looking to move in Corey Dickerson. And not that Corey Dickerson's an all-star caliber player anymore, but I think, you know, he is going to be a good piece when he's healthy for this team, as someone that can be a really good hitter against right-handed pitching. I hate using this term because it gets thrown around all the time, but he does give you a professional at bat. Like, it's true, against right-handed hitters. Guy's got an almost 850 career OPS against righty pitching. That's pretty phenomenal for a team that's in sore need of a lefty bat, because Rowdy Tellez just hasn't, you know, cut the mustard this year. And Joe Panik, God bless him, you know, wasn't exactly a big time threat every time he, you know, came to the plate. He did homer in his first at bat for the Marlins, though, which was kind of hilarious.
He did.
Of course he did. But yeah, Corey Dickerson, I think he could be a pretty significant piece down the stretch as someone that can potentially platoon with a Randall Grichuk or Lourdes Gurriel Jr. or be a bat off the bench. Like, I think he's got potential to, you know, make an impact with this team. So just a great piece of business to get, you know, two pieces that this team sorely needed in a left-handed bat, and obviously Adam Simber.
Agreed. And it's funny because I still remember Dickerson from just being a thorn in the Jays' side when he was with the Rays, as most guys are when they go to the Rays. But you're right, man. Just having that lefty bat off the bench or in a platoon situation where he is going to give you, again, to lean on the professional hitter side of the terminology there. But yeah, like, he's going to give you a pro a bat, which is something that with so much youth on this team, you maybe wouldn't get from, let's say, a prospect that you're trying to, like, ease in to the team type of thing.
Let's just hope this one works out better than Daniel Vogelbach.
Who's doing pretty well in Milwaukee.
Right.
He did great before Toronto, too, but he did nothing for us. So that's funny.
So I saw this stat the other day, and it kind of made my eyes pop because it's pretty incredible. So the only players in American League history with 20-plus home runs, 10-plus stolen bases, 20-plus doubles, and 60-plus runs through 80 games is one, Lou Gehrig in 1930 and 31, and the other player, Marcus Semien.
Yeah,
how impressive. Wild. Isn't that wild? Like, how impressive has Marcus Semien been to you this season, and do you see this front office making a push to try and sign him?
I think, you know, he's played beyond my wildest dreams. Like, I did not expect this type of Marcus Semien. He's having a career year, really. Yeah. He's on pace to do that. Very reminiscent of his 2019 season when he was third in AL MVP voting. But I just think you look at everything that he's done at the plates, you know, as a leadoff hitter, a guy that's hit in a bunch of different spots in the lineup. It's just, you know, where would this team be without his level of production? Because he, you know, Vladdy had a great May, but Marcus Semien carried them a lot of the times in that month as well. And, you know, since George Springer came back and Semien stayed in the leadoff spot, he's been on an absolute tear as well. So it's just, you know, if I had to give him a grade, it's an A+ for Marcus Semien this year. He's been worth all the money that they've given him this year. And when I look into the offseason, you know, I said it on yesterday's Jays Talk that I personally think it's unlikely that we'll see him come back. And for me, the reason I bring it up is just because I think, you know, long-term, if you put the truth serum in Marcus Semien long-term, what do you want to do? I think he wants to play shortstop. I don't think he wants to be, you know, a second baseman for the rest of his career. That's what he was looking to do coming into the offseason. What is intriguing, though, is I know I think a few months ago, Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet.ca wrote a piece about Marcus Semien signing with the Blue Jays, and apparently they had talked about a multi-year deal before they agreed to the one-year deal. So that goes to show that, you know, he was thinking about Toronto as a potential longer-term option than the one-year, you know, contract that he did sign. But I think for me, you know, the question is, does he want to play second base for the next, you know, 5 years? I wouldn't think so. I think he wants to be a shortstop. That's obviously the marquee position. You're going to get a lot more money there from free agency. And he's, you know, obviously playing himself into a pretty hefty contract this offseason. So if it's just a one and done, I mean, it's going to be one of the better one and dones in Blue Jays team history. But, you know, I think it's unlikely. I know some other people, my co-host Josh Goldberg included, thinks that he's not completely writing it off that Marcus Semien is back. But that's just my opinion, that while the Blue Jays will, I'm sure, explore, you know, talks with him and see what's up, that I still think, you know, there's a decent chance that this is probably a one and done situation for Marcus Semien, in my opinion.
So in your opinion, the most likely scenario is qualifying offer, grab your draft picks and move on.
Yeah, I think that could be it. You know, I look at the free agent crop with guys like Trevor Story and Carlos Correa and Corey Seager. If those guys make it to market, I'm probably more inclined to look at those guys. You know, Marcus Semien's on the wrong. Yeah, those guys are younger. Marcus Semien's on the wrong side of 30, and those other guys, you know, intrigue me a little bit more. So I think, you know, there's some attractive options out there. But that being said, if it's a case where it doesn't work out with those guys and they circle all the way back to Marcus Semien and are able to, you know, find a way to bring him back, I don't think anybody's going to be upset about that.
No.
Especially with the way that he's played so far this season. But it's going to be one of the more interesting, you know, conversations of the offseason is what happens with Marcus Semien. Does he come back? If so, in what role, what capacity? Because he's been as advertised so far this year.
It's been interesting to see, because I truly believe that this switch to second base has probably increased his value. I mean, the second base free agent market this year is definitely not a lot shallower, let's say, than the shortstop market. So he may be able to get one of those big contracts where maybe he starts playing at second base and transitions to third in a year, or depending on where whatever team goes after him with that shortstop position. But yeah, he is definitely – talk about betting on yourself and it working out, eh?
Yeah, and maybe I'm completely off base here. I mean, we haven't been able to really talk to these guys, of course, being on these Zoom calls. You can't, you know, have these one-on-ones in the clubhouse or really get a sense of it. But maybe he does, you know, like it with the Blue Jays. I was going to say like it in Toronto. A guy hasn't even played a game in a Blue Jays uniform in Toronto. But maybe he does like the organization, and maybe he is totally willing to stay with this team and play second base. That I'm, you know, totally willing to say that that's on the table, of course. But I just, you know, look at a guy who was a star shortstop for a couple of years here. He's been building up his value, trying to get back on the market. All of a sudden, he's going to say, you know what, I'm done with shortstop. I want to be a second baseman. I just, you know, if we're being honest, like I don't see that being the case. I think he wants to be at shortstop long term. I think that's where he sees it. And, you know, at 30 years of age, I mean, he's probably looking at one more big time contract as well. So, you know, even if the situation is great for the Blue Jays, if a team comes along and, you know, backs up the Brinks truck and puts, you know, 20, 30 million more dollars on the table, maybe another extra year, that's hard to pass up, right?
Mm-hmm. So let's get wild then. Let's get crazy. Let's say the Blue Jays are in on Marcus Semien. What is the likelihood that they're talking to Bo about moving from short to second?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult conversation with anybody that the Blue Jays potentially pursue that can play that position. I think, you know, if they do bring back Marcus Semien, I think they bring him back right as a second baseman, just because they've already done this year with Bo at short and Marcus at second, that it would be too awkward of a conversation to say, hey, he's back and he's going to take your job at shortstop and you guys are going to flip. I just, you know, that's just not a realistic conversation. And, you know, I posed it as well on a recent Jays talk about, you know, if you do look at Carlos Correa, Trevor Story, you know, Corey Seager, if those guys are, you know, real options that you're considering, then you're going to have that conversation about, you know, with Bo about moving over to a different position. Because once again, kind of similar to Marcus Semien and how I think, you know, he probably wants to play shortstop long term. Does Trevor Story, Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, you know, regardless of how much money you pay those guys, are they going to want to come to Toronto and be a third baseman or be a second baseman? No, those guys are coming to play shortstop, or, you know, they're probably looking elsewhere where they can get that opportunity. You know, the Blue Jays, while they're on a great track here and potentially becoming a World Series contender within the next, you know, 5 years, we do see it from time to time where, you know, guys go to a different ball club and they say, yeah, I'll play wherever you want because this team affords me an opportunity to win a World Series title. I'm not sure the Blue Jays are at that point yet where you can add a piece like a Trevor Story and he's going to say, yeah, I'll play third base, I'll play second base because you got all these guys here. I still think, you know, if you're looking at those guys in free agency, they're coming as shortstops. And I think, you know, that's going to be interesting to see what happens there, because I think a lot of people have definitely, you know, pointed as those guys as, you know, pieces that the Blue Jays may pursue this offseason.
Now, all that said, I still strongly believe you just keep Bo Bichette at shortstop because it's going to pay off, much like it did for Marcus Semien and all the errors that he made and was allowed to kind of grow into a good defensive shortstop. I think that that's the route to take for Bo. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the most recent game against Tampa where he made the errors in the field there, you know, drops the routine ground ball. Then he makes an amazing play to keep the ball in the infield, but, you know, chucks it away and is a little bit too aggressive there. You know, those are parts of his game that he still, you know, needs to work on. It's not as bad as it was at the beginning of the season where it felt like every single night we were having a conversation or a referendum about, you know, Bo Bichette's long-term future at shortstop. I think for me, I would probably prefer him to be at a different position, but with the caveat as well that, you know, I think overall, if he stays a shortstop long-term, it's not the worst thing in the world because he's not, you know, the worst defender in the league. Is he ever going to be an elite shortstop? Maybe not, but he hits so well that it makes up for any deficiencies he has. Because, you know, I made the comparison to Fernando Tatis, and this year he's been really bad at shortstop, but he's also been a top five hitter in the league. So like he's giving you way more of a value at the plate than he is giving away defensively, that it doesn't matter. So I know people like to look at a game like yesterday and say, geez, Bo Bichette, like, you know, this guy needs to get off shortstop immediately, but he also had two hits in the game and he's was named to the All-Star team. Yeah. So like he's doing a lot of good things.
He's also 23 with under a full season under his belt. I think he's at 158 games or something like that. Like,
yeah,
he is still learning, right?
For sure. And I've seen people say, and I do agree with it somewhat as well, that, you know, even if you move him to second base, is he not gonna like make some of these same plays at second base, right? And it's a position that he hasn't played since, you know, becoming a professional baseball player. So there is a transition there. Marcus Semien's made it look seamless because he's obviously he's obviously played the position before, but, you know, I just think the reason I'd say I think long-term Bo is probably best suited at a different position is because of those other players that I mentioned. I mean, if you're looking to get a Trevor Story, who's an elite defensive shortstop, you're putting him at shortstop. Same with the Carlos Correa. Like, you're putting those guys there because they have better defensive value than Bo, and it just optimizes your team so much better. So I think if you don't pursue those guys and you can't land one of them, then Bo Bichette's your starting shortstop and you're feeling great about it because he's a phenomenal player. Like, I don't want to make it seem like I don't think he's a phenomenal player, but I just think, you know, long-term, if this team is looking to add, you know, one of those three guys that we talked about this offseason, then I think you're going to have that tough conversation because, once again, those guys aren't coming here to play second base or third base, and they just are better suited in that position defensively than Bo Bichette at this stage of his career.
Yeah, this offseason is going to be so interesting to see how the chips fall. That is for sure.
If we don't... If we don't retain Semien, and if we don't go out and get a Correa or a Story, and we're looking to fill that hole from within, how likely do you think it is that we are seeing a Jordan Groshans or an Austin Martin, perhaps? I know we've talked... We've heard a lot of talk about them kind of transitioning to third base because of the kind of log jam that's at shortstop.
Gabriel Moreno even is starting to get some starts.
Yeah, right. But do we start seeing Jordan Groshans talked about at second base moving forward?
Yeah, it's interesting because those guys this year, they haven't played second base. You know, Groshans and Martin, they've been rotating back and forth. You know, Martin's been shortstop. He's been center field. Groshans been shortstop. I believe he's played some third base as well. So those guys have been mostly on the left side of the infield as opposed to the right side of the infield. I think, you know, if Marcus Semien doesn't come back next year, you're probably going to see Kevin Biggio go back to second base. That would be my guess. And then they would look to find an upgrade at third base and someone that can play there long term. And, you know, maybe that is Jordan Groshans who comes up and gets an opportunity there. I still think it's a little bit early for him. I think they want to get him some more seasoning down in the minor leagues just because he's been, you know, banged up the last few years, and to get a few more games down in AAA or even AA, I think would be big for his development. The Austin Martin thing is interesting because, you know, he's a guy that obviously can be, you know, is so athletic that he can play anywhere on the field, but they haven't put him at second base this year. So I wonder if, you know, that's something that maybe they do in the future. But I think, you know, if Kevin Biggio is still here, I think that's probably the easy answer, that he probably goes back to second base and plays there most of the time and still helps out in other positions.
He's pretty decent at second, like in comparison
for sure
to some of the other positions, but yeah.
Yeah, you're not feeling bad about Kevin Biggio being a full-time second baseman, but I think that's probably the easy move. That being said, I mean, maybe they go out and, you know, find some replacements and keep Kevin Biggio kind of moving all over the place. But, you know, if Marcus Semien leaves, that's a big hole at second base, and that's a big hole in the lineup. But, yeah, this offseason, it's, you know, we thought this past offseason was interesting with George Springer. I think next offseason is going to be even more interesting because, you know, we're thinking the Blue Jays are making this push now. They've been building up to it with Ryu, with Springer. They bring in Semien this year. You know, there's a lot of potential to make some pretty big splashes in the offseason again next offseason. So I think it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Speaking of the offseason being crazy too, sorry, what do you think the chances are we see a work stoppage next year?
Oh boy, I don't even want to think about
that. Okay, that's fine. We can move on.
Yeah, that would be terrible. I know we were talking about the sticky substance stuff before, and I know some people, a long time baseball people, have brought that up as, you know, sort of part of the back and forth between the players union and Major League Baseball, using it as like a bargaining chip and just some nastiness to try to get things started here. So it's, you know, within the realm of possibility, it's a non-zero chance that we see a work stoppage. I don't think anybody would be surprised. Major League Baseball, we all remember what happened last summer where, you know, we thought we were going to get baseball and then it was pushed back a few weeks and everybody's like, geez, every time you guys like have something going here, you find a way to screw it all up.
Gun to foot. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think, you know, I would be surprised if we see some reports coming out at the end of the season, you know, from Ken Rosenthal or John Heyman or whoever, that like, oh, things aren't looking good. And we're like, oh, geez. So I think it's on the table, but hopefully it's not a realistic possibility.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. That would be the worst.
Yeah.
So let's talk prospects for just a second here. So the top five prospects in the Blue Jays system: Nate Pearson, Austin Martin, Jordan Groshans, Semien Woods-Richardson, and Gabriel Moreno. Do you think that there is any chance one of those five are used in a trade to acquire some win now pieces, whether it's this trade deadline or in the off season? And if there is any chance one of those get moved, who do you think is most likely, and what kind of piece would we expect in return?
I think Gabriel Moreno has played himself into a spot here where, you know, he's pretty cemented as the quote unquote catcher of the future that everybody looks at. I think the progress that he's made defensively and offensively specifically have really vaulted him to another level here. And, you know, to have that up the middle piece for such a young guy, you know, he's doing it at what, 20, 21.
Yeah.
It's really phenomenal. And you don't exactly find those types of players these days, you know, behind the plate that can do what he does on both sides. So I think, you know, he's pretty locked in at this point that if they're moving him, it's going to be for someone with a lot of control. That's a really, really good player. So yeah. I think it would be very difficult for the Blue Jays to part with him. Same with Austin Martin, you know, falls into the Blue Jays lap in the draft last year. I don't think they're, you know, really ready to move off of him. The other three guys that you mentioned, I would never say never, but, you know, they could be potential pieces. You know, Jordan Groshans, while I still believe in him and I think, you know, he can be a very solid piece for this team moving forward. I think, you know, the Blue Jays have, you've been asked about him previously, and I think he's been a part of some, you know, potential frameworks. Nothing obviously ended up happening, but, you know, he could be someone I could see the Blue Jays moving off to bring in a piece. Simeon Woods Richardson, I think he's going through a bit of a tough run here of late. Not that the shine has come off necessarily. It's just a few starts, but, yeah, you know, with the emergence of, for sure, with the emergence of, you know, Alek Manoah and, you know, we talked about Ross Stripling and Ryu's here, maybe you sign Robbie Ray. You know, you've got four-fifths of a rotation already locked up there, and maybe the Blue Jays go this offseason to try to get some more starting pitching, whether it's through free agency or through trade. And, you know, maybe Woods Richardson is a guy that you potentially move to make a deal. And Nate Pearson at this point, I don't really know. I still have a ton of hope that, you know, when healthy, he's a guy that, you know, can come in and get the job done. I think, you know, when you look at prospect evaluators, and I think, you know, times have changed where it was a little bit more difficult than years past. I mean, the fact that everybody keeps saying that he's going to be a thing, he's going to be a thing, whether it's in the rotation or as a bullpen piece, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that's not something we see, you know, for a few more years. Mm-hmm. I just believe in the talent too much that I think he can be something, but, you know, his profile is it's high risk, right? The big guy. And now that he's dealing with some injuries, dealing with some control problems, you know, there's a lot of volatility there. So while it would be very, very difficult to part with an A. Pearson, maybe not right now because he's hurt and it's been a down year that his value probably will never be higher, you know, because we see it all the time. Guys come up to the major leagues, get exposed, and then teams are wary of, you know, trading for these guys because they finally get a sniff of the major leagues. But if you were ever to move an A. Pearson, you know, maybe it would be this offseason if you feel like his value is never going to be higher and you can bring in a legitimate piece. I know the whole Pearson for Berrios thing was out there on social media recently. And yeah, I didn't love it because I don't think Jose Berrios is, you know, a phenomenal pitcher by any means. But I can understand where people are coming from that, you know, you have Nate Pearson who, you know, there's some volatility there and it's been a struggle for him at the major leagues. And at the very least, Jose Berrios is, you know, someone for the last 5-6 years has been getting major league hitters out on the regular. So I can totally get it. But Groshans, Woods Richardson, Pearson, not in any particular order, but I could see something potentially happening with those guys. Those would be the biggest trade pieces the Blue Jays would have. But Martin and Moreno, I think that's a no-go for me.
Interesting. I really like that. You touched on Alek Manoah, so I'm curious where you're at on him. His arrival has been just a pleasant surprise, a big boost to the team. He hasn't been out of this world, but he's been solid. How do you evaluate Manoah's season to this point? And do you think there's any sort of innings limit on him as the season moves forward?
Yeah, that I'm curious about because he obviously hasn't pitched a ton, was at the all training sites all last year. I think the Blue Jays are, you know, going to be cautious with him. And, you know, maybe there's a stretch coming up over the next month or so where they give him a little bit more time off. Maybe they skip a start just to give him a bit of a break. That being said, I mean, we haven't really seen any issues with him. It's not like he's, you know, laboring or the velocity's down. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been able to keep it up pretty much the last few starts here. So he's, you know, exceeded all my expectations. I thought coming into the season that, you know, I said I thought we would see him at some point this year, but it'd be, you know, in August, September, pitching out of the bullpen, giving this team, you know, big time relief innings. I thought that's where we were headed. So the fact that he's come up and been, you know, more than adequate as a major league starter and that last outing against Tampa Bay, that's, I mean, we talk a lot about the Yankee Stadium, you know, first career start. That was great. But this one was just, I've never seen his stuff look better
that
in any of his
slider,
outings.
Man. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, nasty.
Yeah, it was great. So, it gives you, you know, it just lets you dream on it a little bit that if this guy over the next few years gets a little bit more seasoning, gets a little bit more experience, this is the type of performance we could see on a regular basis. So I don't know if he'll ever be, you know, a number one ace type level pitcher, but, you know, number two, number three. I mean, I think that's probably where he's settling in. And right now,
Mark Burley, I'll settle for that.
Yeah. Hey, you know, this day and age, you go out and you give up, you know, you go six innings, seven innings, give up two, three runs. I mean, you can't ask for any more these days. So I think Alek Manoah has been just incredible for this team and has given them a massive boost in the rotation since coming in.
All right, Rob, thank you so much for your time, my man. We really appreciate it. We do have a few listener questions for you. Do you have a couple more minutes here? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think my earbuds might be going down in battery here. So hopefully.
Okay. Well, fingers crossed here. All right. So this one is from Alyssa in Toronto. She says, hey, Rob, love your work and love listening to you on the radio. What, in your opinion, is the perfect ads at the deadline? What is the type of ad that would excite you?
Okay, well, let's like swing for the fences, literally and figuratively. Joey Gallo, bring me Joey Gallo play anywhere on the diamond. If they want to put him in left field, right field, third base, I know he hasn't played there in like 6 years, but you know, bring me Joey Gallo because I think he would be incredible for this team. And if you want to expand the deal with Texas, you know, throw in Ian Kennedy and make sort of a big monster deal. But I think that's what I'm looking at a big time relief pitcher, whether it's an Ian Kennedy, you know, Craig Kimbrell having a great season, mm-hmm. like that guy would be a phenomenal ad. And, you know, another lefty bat that could play quite a bit, and Joey Gallo would be at the top of the list. So that's more of the pipe dream. I don't know how realistic that would be. I truly do think the Blue Jays are going to add at least one reliever down the stretch here. So, you know, maybe it is an Ian Kennedy, but if we're going big here, I'm looking at, you know, Joey Gallo, Ian that. Kennedy super deal with the Texas Rangers. Sign me up for that.
Awesome. Malik in Brampton says, hey, Rob, Gerrit Cole, since this sticky stuff ban has been incredibly average, how worried should the Yankees be?
They should be terribly worried.
Right? Terrified.
This guy's under contract for like 10 more years at like $30 million. And to, you know, have a number three starter for $30 million a year, not great, because this is the team, of course, stuck in a situation where they're right up against the luxury tax. And, you know, they're trying to make sure that they don't go over it and pay the tax. So it's not great for them. It's great for everybody else that dislikes the Yankees. But he's getting older. The sticky stuff ban here. I mean, as we said, there's probably going to be a situation where, you know, we get back to where guys are going to be able to use something to get a grip on the ball. But spider tack, all of that stuff, that's no longer allowed. So if that's what was, you know, giving Gerrit Cole the extra RPMs and allowing him to do what he's done for the last, you know, 3-4 years since going to Houston and now New York, then too bad, man, because you're going to have to figure something out here, because it's not looking good. I think he'll make the adjustment. You know, he's a talented pitcher even before the spider tack stuff. He wasn't, you know, what he was the last few years, but you know, in Pittsburgh, he was still a very good pitcher. But, you know, getting into your mid to late 30s here over the next little while and without the sticky stuff, it might be a rough go. And especially in that market where the fans don't exactly have a ton of patience. Yeah. I think that might be difficult as well.
I love that sentiment, Rob. Too bad.
Yeah, too bad.
So your last question here is from Jenna in Vancouver. She says, hey, Rob, I never miss a Jays talk. Always enjoy your takes. What has been the biggest surprise of the season for you so far on this Blue Jays team?
Ooh, that is a good one. I think it's got to be Ross Stripling, right? Ross Stripling, who, you know, you thought, wow, is this guy going to be a DFA candidate? Like, what are they going to do with him? Is he going to be, you know, just tossed in the bullpen and never to be heard from again? And for him to turn it around and become one of the most reliable pitchers on this team, I think has to be the biggest surprise. So that's probably right at the top of the list. You know, I think the first few months of Randall Grichuk was a great surprise because he really did carry the team for a while there, and he won them a lot of games. So I think Ross Stripling and Randall Grichuk's at least beginning of the season, those would have been my my biggest surprises for 2021. And just, I guess, as a small one, those 4 1/3 innings of Julian Merriweather, where he looked like the best closing pitcher on planet Earth. We'll never forget those 4 1/3 innings from Julian Merriweather. Hopefully we'll
see
him back.
So he does exist. That really did happen.
He does exist.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really did happen. He's a real guy, and he was throwing 99 miles an hour with an 80-mile-an-hour changeup at Yankee Stadium. But that's how I would rank it. Ross Stripling, Randall Grichuk's first couple of months, and Julian Merriweather's 2 weeks as a Blue Jay in 2021.
I love it.
Amazing, Rob. Thank you so much. So appreciate you taking the time and talking some ball with us, man. All the best.
Yeah, guys, it was great. Anytime.
Thanks for listening to The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack. Join us for a new episode next
Tuesday.
Oh, with a drive. Jesus, Cracker chose to pitch to him.